Salt of the Earth. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. Matthew 5, verse 13. In the main source of salt in the region of Israel was the area of the Salt Sea, popularly known as the Dead Sea, especially the massive, about 7 miles long, salt cliffs of Jebel Usdom, Mount Saddam. The face of the ridge is constantly changing as weather interacts with the rock salt. Ezekiel 47 verse 11 highlights the importance of the Salt Sea salt. The Hebrew people harvested salt by pouring seawater into pits and letting the water evaporate until only salt was left. They used the mineral for seasoning and as a preservative. In 2 Chronicles 13 verse 5, King Abijah referred to Yahweh's covenant promise to David that he will not lack a man to seat on Israel's throne as a salt covenant. That is, a covenant that can never be broken. Since genuine salt by itself can never lose its flavor as its chemical properties do not change, this saying in Matthew becomes difficult to understand. A saying in the Talmud attributed to R. Joshua ben Hananjia, when asked the question, "When salt loses its flavor, how can it be made salty again?" is said to have replied, "By salting it with the afterbirth of a mule." He was then asked, "Then does the mule, being sterile, bear young?" To which he replied, "Can salt lose its flavor?" The point appears to be that both are impossible. So what was Yeshua trying to convey? Under what circumstances could salt lose its flavor? Salt is a compound of sodium, an unstable metal that is highly flammable, and chloride, a lethal gas. When salt is exposed to extreme heat, these elements are released, producing an environment that causes heat retention. Those who know their way around cooking techniques know that salt added to water makes the water boil at a higher temperature, thus reducing cooking time. The background of the saying Yeshua referred to above points to the use by Mideast bakers of the time to line the floor of their oven with salt blocks to make the fire hotter. Under the intense heat of the oven fire, these blocks would eventually crystallize and undergo a change in chemical composition, finally becoming unusable. At that point, they would be crushed and thrown out with their only usefulness defined as a covering for the roadways that were heavily walked upon. This verse comes immediately on the heels of the Sermon on the Mount, often referred to as the Beatitudes, that begins with the chapter in Matthew 5 where Yeshua describes the makeup of spirit, the chemical composition, if you will, of those who long for the Spirit of the Father. "I indeed baptize you with water unto repentance, but he who is coming after me is mightier than I, whose sandals I am not worthy to carry. He will baptize you with spirit and fire." Matthew 3 verse 11. Salt has no choice in how it reacts to extremes. We do. Yeshua is saying to not allow our spirit composition to change when we find ourselves in the middle of extreme circumstances. Just as it is impossible for salt to lose its flavor by having its core nature changed in the intense heat of fire, the only place where those who have embraced the nature of spirit can lose their flavor is also in the fire. What sets us apart from salt is that, as those embracing the nature of the one true Elohim of Israel, notice that he was speaking to his disciples, not the multitude, as has been portrayed in various circles. We have the ability to choose how we respond while in the fire. Yeshua is saying to not allow our composition to change when we find ourselves in the middle of extreme circumstances. If we choose to be humble and meek in the face of pride and hatred, if we choose to remain pure in the face of evil, if we choose to make peace in the face of contention, and if we hunger and thirst for His righteousness in the middle of all that is calling for our attention otherwise, then we are manifesting the true nature of Yahweh, exemplified by the risen one who lives within those who embrace His words. The Greek word translated as the English power used in John 1 verse 12 is exousia, the same word which is used for the translated word authority in Luke 9 verse 1 and means power of choice. It is only those who exercise their power of choice, meaning the choice given them to exercise their belief in the name of Yahweh, that become sons of Yahweh. The authority of choice we are given is the power to choose to exhibit our faith, our belief in His words to be truth in the face of obstacles that are seemingly overwhelming. Every one of the bituities listed describes how the external should be responded to from within. The last involves persecution. It is assuming to think that when true persecution comes, people believe those qualities listed in the bituities will somehow miraculously just rise from within to be exhibited toward perfect strangers when they have yet to be exercised toward those whom we love and are in the closest proximity to us right now. Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you, but rejoice to the extent that you partake of Messiah's sufferings, that when His glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. 1 Peter 4, verses 12 through 13. A friend of mine became involved in the ancient art of blacksmithing a while back. I watched him fashion a piece of metal that he was making into a sword. Beginning with this ugly bar of raw steel, he pumped the bellows on the coals in the fire pit until they became white hot, after which he plunged this metal bar deep in between the recess of the coals. He continued pumping on the bellows. Once the ingot had become as white as the coals, he grabbed the protruding end with some large tongs, laid it on an anvil, and began to pound it mercilessly with a handheld sledge hammer until the heat had obviously receded from it. He then plunged the misshaped metal bar into a bucket of water that was on the floor and left it hissing there for a few minutes until it had sufficiently cooled. Grabbing the steel bar once again, he informed me that to temper steel, one of the hardest substances known to man, it must go through this entire process I had just witnessed at least 7 times. Once it was finished, polished, and sharpened, this ugly piece of metal was transformed into a beautiful sword, an immaculate piece of craftsmanship. As I watched it being forced into the fire, again and again this day, however, with its shape noticeably refined and sculpted each time it emerged, I could not help but to be reminded of the admonition of Apostle Peter above. Hebrews 5 verse 8 says that Yeshua, our example, learned obedience to the Father by the things which He suffered. Our natural human inclination is to recoil from the heat of the fire because it is
not pleasant and is uncomfortable. But in so doing, we extract ourselves from the very process used to fashion us, to shape us, and to mold us into His image. It is in the extremes that we learn of His nature. If we choose to exhibit His nature in the extremes, then the power of Spirit is unleashed within us to temper us to withstand and, in the midst of the fire, to be a sweet-smelling flavor to the rest of the world. For we are unto Elohim a sweet savor of Messiah, both among those being saved and among those being lost. 2 Corinthians 2, verse 15.